delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
So as you just heard from Nick, the forecast for Puget Sound for the next few days is typical January weather, mostly cold rain, very dark. But that wasn't the case 139 years ago this week when the big snow of 1880 paralyzed the Seattle area, which is why historian Felix Bunnell is here for his Wednesday visit, brought to you by the King County Library System. How bad was it?
Well, it was pretty bad, but the records are kind of scant because this was 139 years ago, and there's no official weather data from Seattle for those years. And actually, Jeff Renner had just started his internship in the King 5 First Alert Weather Center. So, and the first Weather Bureau office didn't open here until 1893. But there's some pretty decent anecdotal information. And that great local historian and photographer, Paul Dorpat, he of those wonderful Seattle Now and Then columns and his blog and all kinds of great books, he first wrote about the big snow of 1880 nearly 40 years ago. I talked to Paul earlier this week. He told me how it started to snow on the first Sunday of the new year, and then it didn't really let up.
It came down for about a week from the 4th of January. It started piling up and crashing through roofs and knocking over sheds with its weight and basically making a mess of things.
So the city was pretty much shut down. Transportation was difficult. Schools were closed, and the heavy wet snow made some wooden buildings collapse. Now, the actual snowfall total is a matter of some speculation, but there's no doubt that it was a massive amount that came down that week. Arthur Denny is one of the earliest European settlers and considered one of the founders of Seattle. He wrote a reminiscence of pioneer days that was published in 1888, so this is just a few years after the big snow. And what he said, quote, "The deepest snow ever known here was in January 1880, measuring 4.5 feet after it had settled, and would have measured much more as it fell. I made inquiry of the Indians and could get no account of anything like it before, and it may therefore safely be called unusual, as the like has not been known to the white inhabitants except in this instance." So it's a huge amount. Another historian named William Prosser estimated 5 feet of snow even after it had been compressed. Another historian, Clarence Bagley, said maybe 7 feet fell. And more recently, a researcher named Wolf Reed estimated a total of 6 feet. Whatever the precise amount, it's safe to say that it was probably the most snow ever on the ground in Seattle. Fortunately, there's a handful of photos from the big snow, and Paul Dorpat shared those, and we've posted those at My Northwest. But I want to step back from the weather part of the story, because 1880 was a pivotal year for Seattle. It was the start of the decade of the most rapid growth in the city's history, by far, before or since. I asked Paul what living in Seattle was like for the average person back in 1880.
Well, it was the largest town. You had a certain amount of pride. That year, the census revealed that it was the largest town in the territory. Walla Walla had been the largest town before that. And so you were living now in the town that had the most citizens, and it never gave that up.
And the population of Seattle grew from about 3,500 in 1880 to more than 42,000 by 1890. That's an annual growth rate of more than 28%, which is just off the charts. Walla Walla, by comparison, also had about 3,500 in 1880, and by 1890 had 4,700. Not to pick on Walla Walla, but even way back in that pivotal year of 1880, Paul Dorpat says that Seattle wasn't actually too different from now in terms of infrastructure.
It still didn't have any mass transit. I mean, it didn't even have a common carrier. It didn't get that until 1884 when there was a horse trolley that was built that went up Second Avenue up to Helltown. It did have sewers. It had running water. It had a telephone. And electricity was going to become commonplace pretty quickly. So it had a lot of the things, actually, that you and I now take sort of for granted.
So because there wasn't a lot of especially transportation infrastructure to paralyze, I asked Paul if maybe the big snow of 1880 was actually not really a hardship, maybe a nuisance at worst, or maybe even just kind of fun?
That's it. That's it. And a good thing to make jokes about and to remember and actually to enjoy. It was to the greater good of the citizens that they had all that snow drop on it. They enjoyed it. They had a good time.
Just like now, right?
Now, right.
You know, there were sleigh rides and snowball fights and young men making money shoveling snow. Speaking of snow removal, Orange Jacobs was the mayor of Seattle in January 1880. The city council appropriated $100 for snow removal. I couldn't find anywhere if the administration gave themselves a letter grade for the snow removal.
Yeah.
Is it too soon for a joke like that? Sorry. Apologies to Greg Nichols. Also in the middle of this, there was this huge windstorm called the Storm King, which hit the Willamette Valley and part of southwest Washington, blew through Seattle, didn't do any wind here, but brought more snow around January 8th. And it's weather geeks call this a Storm King. It's not as well known because it's so long ago and the records are sketchy. But, you know, all this stuff comes from Paul Dorpat's wonderful book. He's got a new book out now about the top 100 photos of his Now and Then column. So it's just really crazy that this storm has never really been, no, it's never come close before or since. This huge amount, like 6 feet of snow over a week. It's crazy.
Find the contractor who only charged $100 to clear the streets.
Yeah, and who knows how many plows they had in those days. But anyway, it was a great storm.
Thank you, Felix. No. All of Felix's stuff is on MyNorthwest.com. He joins us every Wednesday for a look at the non-breaking news affecting Seattle. And
I have one more thing I wanted to share. Let me hand this book to you. Hang on.
Yes.
I was down at Powell's in Portland the other day. I'm always looking ways to make more powerful radio, and I saw this book called Creating Powerful Radio.
Creating Powerful Radio, yes.
I had actually already bought it and was walking back to the train station when I thumbed through it, and I saw a very familiar face leap out at me at page 98.
Page 98, there I am.
And it says, hybrid news talkers like Dave Ross are rare talents. Wearing both hats, they manage to bridge the gap. A listener can tell what Dave thinks from his newscast, but also knows what an objective and conscientious newsman he is when hearing his talk show.
How about that?
It is impossible to describe Dave Ross's creativity, but we can all attest to that, I think.
Yeah. Well, buy this book right away.
Do you remember being part of that book?
Or? Yes, I was interviewed by Valerie Geller, yes.
Okay, maybe we'll put this on social media, the picture of you from, I think the book's from 1996. That's a picture of you from probably 1980.
That was my lobby shot from the old Cairo building. I was looking very authoritative and remarkably young.
That's nice. People know you've been creating powerful radio for a long time, Dave, right. So thank you.
Well, thank you. You're so nice, Felix.